very good Thursday. Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. The show starts off here today with a report from Taylor Chalstrom, where he talks about declining almond profitability and difficult decisions that growers might have to make in the future. The report starts things off right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
There's no doubt that production costs per acre in tree nut farming have cut into profit margins. Rising labor and fuel costs are part of the production cost increase, but water availability and cost is ultimately the deciding factor in almond profitability. Water is the most critical input as it determines crop production. Loss of water and reduced water quality is causing growers to make hard decisions on farming individual blocks of trees. Tom Vermeulen, certified public accountant and almond grower, gave his perspective on almond profitability from the grower and accountant side. He started off with the grower perspective, talking about what he's seen for almond profitability in recent years.
I do see declining profitability through almonds, almonds, because of productivity, but also the cost of inputs, chemicals, labor, the cost of the land, everything is through the roof. So I often advocate that people build, you wouldn't build a home without a set of plans, and you shouldn't build a business without a set of plans either. So there are several stakeholders involved in your business. There's first and most important is your family. The second stakeholder might be your banker, who is interested to look at the results of your decisions. But the third is yourself, as you'll wish to look back on a life well lived and productively spent. So there are quite a few things that involve long range planning that should be involved in your decision. And through the process, you'll find several opportunities for operational savings.
Vermeulen suggests growers start thinking about any potential savings by making one of these financial plans, keeping the end in mind.
Consider the life of your operation. Look at water availability, review alternate land sources if there is no reliable water source. Consider the age of your trees. Older orchards may need rejuvenation or replacement. Consider your soil profiles and amendments that may be needed to optimize tree growth and production. And then younger orchards are building for future productivity. So you'll invest in chemicals and water supplies and so forth for future productivity. So you should look at all the resources you use and consider the economics in all of them.
Many almond growers in the state will have to make some pretty tough decisions in the wake of this reduced water availability and reduced almond profitability.
Some of the tougher decisions are chemicals, what we feed our trees, because what you put into the trees today supports tomorrow's productivity. So if you short the chemicals or you short the maintenance or the pruning this year, you'll pay for that in future years. So in the end, though, cash is king. And if you aren't able to afford all the inputs, you don't really have a choice. But what you withhold today will affect the future of the orchard and will affect next year's profitability.
As Vermeulen echoed previously, growers need to keep the end in mind by creating sound financial plans for their operations in the future. Considerations in the plan, he said, must include water availability or alternative land use, age of orchard, and soil profile or amendments needed to optimize production. Those considerations, he said, are vital in a decision to invest in a new orchard for future productivity.
Compare historical trends within your ranch, productivity per acre, both cost per acre, cost per pound for labor, chemicals, harvest costs, etc. You'll want to trend your historical production costs and compare your history against others. For example, the UC Davis surveys provide excellent resources as a database for farmers to compare their productivity and the cost of the inputs. Once you understand the trends and the history, then prepare projections, or by less fancy name, it's a budget. What are your expectations? What changes do you envision from past performance? And what internal and external changes are expected? What things can you control and what things are beyond your control? Then lay out a plan for the next 5 to 10 years. Look for capital improvements, equipment needs, orchard replacement, and the attendant loss of income and cash flow. And is debt service consideration? It probably is, or you wouldn't be reading this. Plus, with Ammonground going at $65,000 or so per acre, you're probably going to have some pretty strong banking behind your decision to farm.
Besides a financial plan, Vermeulen said that growers should also lay out a farming plan for the next 5 to 10 years. Capital improvements, equipment needs, and orchard replacement are major components. Loss of income and cash flow until an orchard is producing and debt service are important considerations as well.
Some growers like to grow by the seat of their pants, if you will. They make decisions day by day, moment by moment. And other growers are sometimes criticized for being calendar growers. But I think that we need to have a plan. And you make your plan and you respond to the contemporaneous changes that growing conditions, production, the cost of the inputs, all present to you as things change. I know that you don't have a vision for the future, a perfect vision for the future, but you have to ask yourself the question, what if I did? What if I knew perfectly what would happen in the future? And put that down in a farming plan and then turn that into a cash flow plan.
Vermeulen also explained the importance of reviewing a financial plan at the end of the day and said to develop a best case, a worst case, and a reasonable expectation, as well as to ask if the plan is smart.
The plan should be smart. It should be specific. It should be measurable. It should be achievable, relevant, and timely. And you put together a plan and you have to ask yourself at the end of the day, will this dog hunt? Will I be left over with enough cash to make my debt service, to replace equipment, to provide for my family, and to pat myself on the back and, frankly, look back on a life well lived and a job well done? So make changes. If you get to the end of your plan and you decide that there's not enough cash flow at the end of this plan to support my family, we've got to go to plan B. So is there cash flow left over? If discretionary income remains, you may wish to explore other uses for your cash. Set aside a rainy day or contingency funds, or consider debt retirement. Look for perhaps more land acquisition, or consider a retirement plan, or adding to your operation. You're also going to need to engage in a frank discussion with your banker. The banker will be more than interested in your plans. They're people too, so they like to be talked to regularly, and they don't like surprises any more than you do. So make a plan and review the projections annually with your banker. If you have a plan that includes the needs for additional financing, then discuss those plans for your banker. Kind of prepare them a year in advance for the things that you'll about to be facing, so they're not surprised either.
Vermeulen also said that an orchard's almond profitability and water availability will be dependent on its geographic location within the state. This will also affect how the financial plan and the farming plan is written up.
If you're in Northern or Central California, you probably have a pretty good water supply. But if you're in the South, even some of the down South and beyond the central part of the state, you're probably looking at significant challenges for water. So you need to consider the cost of your water inputs or whether you'll even have enough water to keep your trees alive. In that case, you're going to be looking for alternate future uses of your land.
At the end of the day, Vermeulen said it's important to avoid, quote, paralysis from analysis and to not get tangled up in the intricacies of these plans.
It's good to plan, but don't get tangled up in your plan. Just follow the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid. You know, just we don't, any of us have a perfect vision for the future, but ask yourself, if I did, what would that look like? And put it on paper.
Coming up next, regional and national agricultural news.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Being a member of the California walnut industry means working together to advance the industry through advocacy, research programs, and promoting walnuts with smart, cost-effective marketing. Learn more at walnuts.org.
In regional agricultural news, semi-truckloads of commercial honeybee colonies are arriving in California from across the country to prepare bees for pollination of this year's almond crop. During the next few weeks, beekeepers will finish moving some 2.5 million honeybee colonies into California orchards to pollinate the state's 1.3 million bearing acres of almond trees during bloom. California beekeepers supply about 500,000 honeybee colonies, and a remainder is trucked in from out of state. Almond bloom typically occurs from mid-February to mid-March, and beekeepers say it's too early to tell whether recent sunny temperatures will trigger an early bloom since nighttime temperatures remain low. Annual honeybee losses happen each year due to challenges facing the apiary sector, such as reduced forage, mite, and disease. Commercial beekeepers who place colonies into crops for pollination must comply with a BeeWare program, which tracks and safeguards hives using mapping tools. Beekeepers must register annually with the County Agricultural Commissioner, clearly mark hives with name, address, and phone number, and notify the county within 72 hours of hive relocation. The new legislative session kicked off this past week with two land use bills that will stifle development projects with additional requirements. AB 1547, a Farm Bureau opposed bill, has recently been amended following a hearing by the Assembly Natural Resources Committee. The bill, as introduced last year, would authorize the Air Resources Board to regulate indirect emission sources, a role traditionally held by local air quality management and pollution control districts. The bill would also require a local government, before approving a warehouse development project, to ensure the project is at least 3,000 yards from a sensitive land use, consider all air quality impacts from incoming and outgoing trucks, and require all on-site equipment, loaders, trucks, forklifts, belts, and etc., to be electric. The bill would also require much more significant public outreach to community residents beyond the CEQA requirements, including the development of a community benefits agreement that identifies the project's zero-emission vehicle use, delivery and waste hauling protocols, and private shuttle service. The bill also requires all construction work completed on the warehouse development project to be conducted and be done by a skilled and training workforce, or that is a set percentage of jobs that are offered to residents. Farm Bureau has joined a coalition to oppose AB 1547, with concerns raised about the bill's application to downstream food processing, distribution and storage facilities, and to on- or off-farm coolers and packing sheds. Farm Bureau is also opposing AB 1001. This bill expands CEQA requirements to incorporate the issue of discriminatory land use policies. Specifically, the bill creates two new legal standards. One, it forces all public agencies, when complying with CEQA, to act consistently with the principles of environmental justice. And two, requires all air quality and water quality impacts to be mitigated directly in the affected disadvantaged community. Both requirements are already incorporated in planning and zoning laws and CEQ requirements, and would present more legal challenges and liabilities for lead agencies and project applicants. As a senior member of the House Agriculture Committee, California Representative Jim Costa participated in a hearing on the implications of electric vehicle investments for agriculture in rural America. It was an opportunity to examine the possible obstacles to electric vehicle adoption in rural America and its impact on the food supply chain.
Here is an excerpt from that hearing of Representative Costa asking questions.
And to try to focus on the big picture here, Mr. Strickland, I was in a meeting with one of your primary competitors, another major automotive company there in Detroit, that sets goals for 2030 of over the majority of their automotive production would be electrical vehicles. What similar goals do you have beyond the Bolt and some of the other vehicles you're producing now as General Motors looks at the next 10, 15 years of automobile production?
Yes, sir. We have 20 electric vehicles across our entire sales line that we're going to be introducing over the window where we're going to be fully electric by 2035. We are planning on selling 1 million electric vehicles by 2025. So we are very much fully invested. We are very much all in, and we align with the president. Yeah,
no, I think it's important to put that in perspective because General Motors, Ford Motor Company, the major automotive manufacturers, not only here but in Europe, all have similar targeted goals, it appears to me, as we're trying to look at how we go through this transition. Mr. Cooper, because we're talking here about electrical vehicles, but you talked in a comment earlier about being neutral as it relates to reducing carbon footprints in terms of choice of fuels. Would you care to comment in terms of what role hydrogen, and there was a mention earlier by my colleague from California about what we're doing in dairy and other products. We have turnkey operations on methane production today that are very successful economically. But what role other fuels may have as we make this transition?
Absolutely, and thank you for the question, Congressman. And we think right there in California, you have an excellent example of what can happen when you put a policy signal out to reduce carbon emissions. And with the low carbon fuel standard in California, the response you've seen from the marketplace is a combination of low carbon fuels that have increased their presence in the market to achieve the reduction goals of the program. The same thing could happen at the national level with a similar type program. And you're right, renewable natural gas has made a significant contribution to meeting the objectives of the LCFS in California, not only as a transportation fuel itself, as was mentioned earlier, but also as a process fuel to make ethanol and other biofuels. There are some ethanol plants in California that have invested in taking, capturing methane from dairies, digesting it, and using it to replace natural gas as they make.
What do you think about hydrogen?
And we think hydrogen is another phenomenal opportunity for ethanol. Ethanol is a hydrogen-rich molecule. It's an excellent carrier of hydrogen, and we think ethanol could be a major source for fuel cell electric vehicles further down the road.
My time is running out here, but I want to get a perspective here with the $7.5 billion for the bipartisan infrastructure package on EV charging stations. And we look at rural America that I've grown up on, and I think of back to our family's farming operation. When we talk about EV connections, members of my family and friends already have EV vehicles. They charge them at home. Our farming operation, we had two gas pumps, regular and premium, and we had a separate diesel tank. For a lot of our ag producers in my area, they're going to set up their own separate refueling methods for tractors and for other equipments that they're going to need to use. My time is running out, but I'd like to see how we break this down in terms of American agriculture doing its part.
Representative Costa says he is proud to support the bipartisan infrastructure law, which invests $384 million in a network of EV charging stations across California to accelerate the adoption of EVs to improve air quality and support domestic manufacturing jobs. A check-in of National Ag News right after this.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
In national agricultural news, the Department of Agriculture has announced a comprehensive response to the nation's growing wildfire crisis. The effort is called Confronting the Wildfire Crisis, a strategy for protecting communities and improving resilience in America's forests. The strategy outlines the need to significantly increase fuels and forest health treatments to address the escalating crisis of wildfire danger that threatens millions of acres and many communities across the United States. The Forest Service will work with other federal agencies and partners to strategically focus on fuels and forest health treatments. The strategy highlights new research on what Forest Service scientists identified as high-risk fire sheds, large forested landscapes with a high likelihood that an ignition could expose homes, communities, infrastructure, and natural resources to wildfire. Fire sheds, typically about 250,000 acres in size, are mapped to match the scale of community exposure to wildfire. The groundwork will begin in areas identified as being the highest risk based on community exposure. USDA's Economic Research Service reports most values of cotton, dairy, and specialty crops are produced on large-scale family farms, according to 2020 data. USDA defines a family farm as one in which the principal operator and related family own the majority of the assets used in the operation. Large-scale family farms have an annual gross cash farm income of $1 million or more. However, small family farms produce the bulk of hay production, 59%, and poultry and egg output at 49% as of 2020. Poultry operations are often classified as small because most output is under a production contract arrangement, with a contractor paying a fee to a farmer who raises poultry to maturity. The American Farm Bureau Federation chief economist says the coming year should include higher prices for many crops, but rising input costs will remain a challenge. Reporter Michael Clements shares more on what to look for in 2022.
Lingering issues from the last 2 years will remain in 2022, but American Farm Bureau Federation chief economist Roger Cryan says the good news is commodity prices are projected higher.
Prices are looking pretty good for many of the benchmark crops and animal products. So despite higher prices for fertilizers and chemicals and other inputs, farmers' market returns should be higher in 2022.
Beyond input prices, Cryan says there are other things to watch this year.
Inflation is a big concern, and we're hoping that the Federal Reserve Bank will follow through on their promises to rein that in. Geopolitics keeps batting around our trade relationships, including things like sanctions blocking Belarusian fertilizer supplies, Chinese food and feed purchases, and the Chinese fertilizer export ban. We also see labor as a continuing issue for the farm economy in 2022.
Cryan adds some issues from 2021 will linger this year.
Farmers received very large government payments in connection with COVID in 2020 and 2021, and we don't expect to see that to continue in 2022. We hope that the port problems can clear up some, at least for agricultural exports. If more containers are built and made available for U.S. exporters, it'll be easier to get those containers filled up here in the U.S. for the trip back across the Pacific instead of going back empty. But a lot of supply chain issues will continue well into 2022.
The Musco Family Olive Company is leading the transformation of the table olive industry. We are committed to the California olive grower and invite you to grow with our family. Modern table olive orchards apply newly perfected, state-of-the-art planting and harvesting to one of the world's oldest tree crops for proven superior results. Musco is proud to be America's favorite olive, offering Pearls and early California brands loved nationwide. There is opportunity in any crop transition, and Musco is proud to offer long-term contracts and free trees to our grower partners. Visit our website at www.olives.com/milliontrees to join the table olive revolution.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.